Well, if you're an average height, you don't have to stand on your tippy toes to piss out the ground blind.
Dude, I'm perfectly average. 5'9"?
Okay. 5'7".
Or you just stretch that big old thing out the window.
We're not all lucky like you, Jared.
Anyways.
Welcome back to Knox and Nature, the podcast about archery, hunting, hiking, conservation, firearms, and whatever else you feel like talking about. It is episode 11 today. We got the fellas with us. And we just had opening day of rifle season this past week. So, I don't believe we have any housekeeping to do, although I'll double check. But I
wanted
to start
on Instagram, Knox Nature.
Yep. Okay.
I saw Obi wearing his hat today.
Was he wearing his hat today?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was dope.
To work?
When he was leaving work, he put it on. He's like, yo.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, if you guys enjoy the show, we would appreciate it if you give us a follow on Instagram at KnoxAndNature_podcast. You could also leave us a review or rate the show depending on the platform you listen to. We would very, very much appreciate that. So it does not look like we have any housekeeping to do. But, yes, Justin had mentioned the hat. We do have a very, very limited supply of hats left. So, yeah, if you're interested in a hat, I guess we could post a picture of that on the Instagram. I can do that.
Yeah, and last episode, you know, we talked about people interacting with the show and letting us know, what do you guys want?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so send us a DM on Instagram. That'll be the easiest way.
I want beanies.
And
I want koozies.
We'll look into some of that stuff. We might just do, like, a small batch order, you know, because I don't know that anybody really is going to be super interested in merch, but... Let us know what's going on with that. With that, let's transition into opening day of rifle season. So you want to go first, Justin? Because you had this planned out. You knew you were going to hunt opening day. I didn't know I was going to hunt opening day.
Oh, yeah. I've never missed an opening day. You know, I had my typical deer camp. Usually I go up there a couple days before and bow hunt. You know, so I'll bow hunt the...
like the 13th and 14th?
Yeah, like the 13th and 14th or something. And this year, it just didn't really work out. I had to work the 14th, so I worked a half day and then headed up to camp. But yeah, I knew I was going and whatnot. So I hunted that Friday. Already had my my spot picked out and whatnot. I had a ground blind set up this year. And same place as last year where I shot that buck. It was a weird year up at my cabin for whatever reason. So, you know, it's mainly me, my dad, and my uncle. And all of our spots are kind of reliant on the pressure of other people. And
interesting.
So when deer move around and whatnot, we kind of figured out how to hunt the jack pines.
Okay.
And so no one really wants to hunt the jack pines because they're hard to hunt and they're hard to kind of figure out.
Mm-hmm.
But once you kind of get a spot set up and figure out where the deer are going to be moving when people are bumping them, that's the ticket for the jack pines because they don't need to be in there at all.
No, they don't.
But they use it as cover because no one's in there. It's a pain in the ass to walk through. It, you know, no one goes in there. You
it's
know,
also not great cover for deer. It would be great cover for humans because we're up higher.
Right.
But the lower you get to the ground, the more it opens up a little bit.
But these jack pines are thick.
Yeah. No, so but that's what I'm saying is like, I understand exactly what you're, because cedar swaps can be very similar.
Yeah, that's
well.
The same reason why I hunt the same spot every year. I had multiple opportunities this year to hunt a different blind and I'm like, no. I love the cedar swamp. I know it. I know that deer are laying down in there, and it's a bit of a wild card because opening day, there's pressure, and deer come over here because they feel safe.
Right, and that's what, you know, we kind of use is the pressure of other people because there's a bunch of, you know, kind of bubble hunters up there that, mm-hmm. you know, they put their blinds on the two tracks and they're whatever. No one's walking in the woods or any more than 50 yards off the two track.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, no one was up there. So all the people that were usually around us there was maybe one or two. So no one was bumping deer around. So the deer can either just go in the jack pines and bed down for the day, and then they never get moved.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come out at night and do their thing. Or they stay down in the swamps or whatever.
Did you move around at all?
So I did. I sat all day, opening day. The second day, I took a little bit of a walk. Because once, I mean, even on opening day, we heard less than 10 shots.
Wow.
Usually there's, you know, it sounds like World War II. There's shots all over the place.
Yeah.
And there was less than 10 shots. And it was like, what the fuck's going on? And so the second day, I think it was, you know, around 1 o'clock or something, I took a little walk, ended up kicking up like 3 does. Mm. Couldn't get a shot off at him or whatever. But yeah, I took a little bit of a walk. And then the third day, I can't remember how many days I was actually up there.
Well, you were there at least Friday through Monday.
Yeah, it was Friday. Yeah, Friday through Monday. So it would have been Sunday. I didn't hunt the morning, so I didn't get out there before dark. So Sunday, I found a spot where the jack pines were a little more open, but the day before, I found where they were bedding, and my plan was to get out, you know, somewhere around 8 o'clock or so. And I was just going to kind of make my way and stalk through the jack pines.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd get to an opening, I would glass, you know, I had my binos and whatnot. I would glass around, move a little bit, glass, move, you know, kind of, you know, kind of still hunt through this section of jack pines that was, there's more open than the usual. Didn't end up seeing anything. Found a sweet spot for next year that I think is going to be productive. So I kind of use it as an in-season scouting / still hunting opportunity. And I walked a lot that day. And then I think the afternoon I sat in my blind and didn't see shit.
Now, were you on the ground for the entire time, or did you take your... Okay.
I didn't even take my tree stand up there. I should have, because I found some trees that I was like, man, I wish I could get in that tree. And
well, the jack pines, obviously you're not going to have a whole lot of opportunity to get up in a tree, but if those butt up to like red pines,
well, they have typically usually in the jack pines up there, so they clear cut a bunch of stuff, but they leave some red pines.
That's what I was. Yeah.
So like my uncle and my dad are both in red pines that are surrounded by jack pines.
Yeah.
So the area that I was hunting doesn't have any tall trees, but they have a couple stands of old like red pines.
Mm-hmm.
So I found some of those that are, I think, going to be good for next year.
And I think it's also important to note this is all public land.
Yes, I am hunting all on public land. And that's where it kind of got weird because no one was out there. So no one was bumping the deer around.
Yep.
And it really messed us up. I mean, I think my dad saw one or two deer, just does. I saw 4 or 5, you know, I kicked up those 3. And then on Monday, I saw one other one. So Monday I kind of changed up my game plan cause I wasn't seeing anything. There was no, you know, even the 2 tracks, you know, I would go for a little walk and, you know, cut across a 2 track or whatever. And these 2 tracks, you can usually see where the deer are moving or crossing or whatever.
Yep.
Even if it's at night, you know, they're moving around.
Right.
There was no sign. And that's when I was like, man, the deer are just not here. And so Monday, I had to go back to work on Tuesday. So Monday, my plan was to do something in the morning and then pack up and you know, head on home Monday night. So Monday, I was like, all right, I'm going to go down in the swamp. I just walked from our cabin. Usually we drive out to our spot or whatever, but I was like, I'm just going to walk. I'm going to follow this little ridge and then cut down into the swamp and, you know, I'll just go wherever I feel like. And I actually got a shot at a doe down there. Didn't end up getting it, but that's a whole another thing that we can get into. But
well, let's talk about it, because you switched from the, what are you shooting, the 44 mag to the 350 Legend?
No, I brought 2 guns up there. My one deer rifle that I used.
Blackout, sorry.
Yeah, the one deer rifle that I used in like early antlers is my 300 Savage. It's a Remington 700. It's completely dialed. You know, got an awesome scope on it. It's a, you know, I've killed a bunch of deer with that thing.
And you didn't bring it?
And I didn't even take it to camp. It's the first year ever I haven't taken it to camp. Because I was like, oh, I want to use like these two new rifles that I got. One of them's a Marlin 1894 open sights 44 mag. And then the other one's an AR-15, you know, 300 blackout. You get the LVPO.
LPVO.
LPVO. And I switched back and forth between the two the whole time or whatever. If I was sitting somewhere or just going for a quick walk, I'd take the Marlin. But like that day on Sunday when I just went and still hunting and stuff, I was like, I want to, you know, be able to get a quick shot off. So I took the AR. But then for, you know, whatever reason, I was like, oh, I'm going to be, you know, on Monday, I was like, I'm going to be, you know, stalking through the swamp and whatever. It, mm-hmm. it feels like a cowboy gun kind of thing. And so I took the Marlin.
Dumb idea.
It kind of screwed me, which the gun, like, 44 mag's plenty to kill a deer, but you got to have the right shot, and it's got to be the right opportunity.
And I wouldn't want to take a shot past probably 100, 120?
100 yards is my cap. I mean, especially open sights.
Yeah, for sure.
But anyways, I made a loop, so there's a little creek that kind of goes down through this valley. And I came down the one side, and then my plan was, I knew there was some bedding down kind of at the end of this valley. It turns into private land. So I kind of went up to that private land border and then crossed the creek and then made my way up the other side. And then on the other side, it turns into jack pines too. And, you know, I was just kind of making my way through there and whatnot. And I would, you know, walk a little bit. I would sit down and, you know, watch for a little bit, and then I'd get back up and kind of, you know, mosey on. And I had a couple spots that I knew they were bedding that I scouted in previous years. And so I kind of focused on those areas. But I was on my way back, and it was, you know, maybe 9:30 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And up where it kind of the transition between, like, the swamp and into the jack pines, there's a weird like little transition zone where it's a bunch of dead jack pines. So they're old growth, they've been there forever, and there's a lot of deadfall, a lot of sticks. It's really noisy to walk through. And then in the swamp, like right down by the creek, it's super quiet, lots of moss, like you can stalk through there pretty good. But then it's pretty thick too. So I was kind of, you know, tiptoeing around the border, and I was like, man, I really want to see, because there's a couple different elevation changes, and I was like, I really want to see up kind of on this ridge where the old growth pines are, but I also want to see in the swamp.
Yep.
So I popped back up into the old growth, but I was like, man, it's just so noisy to walk, you it's just really hard to sneak through there.
Yeah, you're gonna
as soon as I said that, I stepped on a little twig, and I you know, jumped up a doe, and the thing, you know, took a couple bounces, and, you know, it kind of disappeared, but I could tell, I could see if it ran one way or another, and I was like, oh, that thing's still there. So I took a couple more steps, and I saw, like, a little dark patch, and I was like, man, is that a deer? And like, I was like, I can't tell if that's that deer or not. And I was watching it, and I was watching it, and I was like, oh, no, it's not. It's just a dark spot, you know, it's a, you know, dark swamp. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to hang out for a second. And this is the only day I didn't bring my binoculars.
Also dumb. Open sights and then no binoculars.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to, like, I was like, I'm just going to go for a walk. I didn't want to bring a bunch of stuff. I almost didn't bring my backpack. But I was like, I need, like, my, you know, knife and tags and,
yeah, for
and
sure.
whatnot. I just need some stuff. So I was like, all right, I'll bring the backpack. It didn't have anything hardly in it. But I wanted to go light because I was like, you know, it's the day before it's the day of that I'm leaving. I'm just going to go for a little walk and, you know, right. whatever. And so I was watching this spot, and I was like, oh, that's not a deer. Like, whatever. I'll just hang out and look at it for a little bit. And then, you know, I was watching it, and then I saw the head move. And I was like, oh, shit, that is a deer. But I was like, I can't tell, you know, where it's at or whatever. I was like, I know I saw a little bit of movement. I saw the head. but I can't tell if, like, am I looking at the ass? Am I looking at the front shoulder? Like,
yeah,
you know, what am I looking at? And then I saw it. It took a couple steps, or at least one step, and then I was like, oh, that's a front leg. And, you know, so I pulled up on it, whatever, shot, and it was probably, it was 75 to 100 yards. It was somewhere in that range, like a decent poke through the swamp.
I think when you first told me about it, it was, you're like, yeah, it was probably like 75 yards.
Yeah, it was somewhere in there. You know, it was kind of between a couple of pines. Like, I couldn't see the head at the time. I couldn't see the ass. It was just like that perfect shot through there. But I don't know if it was quartering to me a little bit or if it was quartering away. Like, it, you know, I didn't have a great picture of how it was standing. But I saw the front leg and I was like, all right, that's where I need to shoot. So I shot, and the thing absolutely folded. Like, it, bam, done. And I was like, sweet. Like, that was awesome.
Right.
And it fell, started doing its little twitching thing or whatever. And then I thought about, you know, putting a couple more rounds in it or whatever. You know, I reloaded. It was like, it would have been. But, you know, you don't want to just shoot the shit out of it and, you know, put a bunch of, you know, shots in the guts or whatever. It's like,
yeah.
And so it fell, started doing the twitching thing, and then I was like, oh, man, I can't really tell the orientation or whatever, so I didn't really want to shoot. And then, you know, did the whole belly up, legs went straight up in the air, and then that's when I saw the ass, you know, big white spot, and I could tell it was kind of facing straight away from me. And, you know, legs went up, flopped over, and then it got up and kind of stumbled away. And that's when, you know, I kind of was like, oh shit, I need to like get after this thing. So I kind of jogged like towards it to see if I could get another shot, and it disappeared. It was right on the edge of the jack pines and disappeared into the jack pines, and I you know, never saw it again. But then I lost all reference to where I was, where the deer was, and I couldn't find where I shot it.
Oh geez.
You know, so I, you know, got on the, you let the other guys know that I was like, hey, you know, I just sent one, whatever, thing went down, ran away, like, might need some help tracking or whatever.
Yep.
So I walked over there, tried to find where it was when I shot it. Couldn't find any blood, couldn't find anything where, like, the moss was kicked up or whatever. I still don't know where it was. But then I did a little circle, found a good blood spot that was probably, you know, 8 inches around, good, bright red blood. Not, like, lung blood or anything, but, like, just good, solid blood. But that's the only thing that I found.
Do you think that was where it went down?
No, it was definitely, it was probably, I don't know, 25 yards from where I think I shot it. It was into the jack pines before I found the blood, where I wouldn't have been able to see it. So I saw that, and I was like, okay. And then, you know, my dad and uncle came over, and they were already taking their tree stands down and stuff. So they're like, yeah, we'll pop over and whatever.
Yeah.
Cause we were all getting ready to head home. And then my dad knows, one of the guys up there that he guides elk with has a tracking dog. I can't remember what kind of dog it is. But it's a fairly new, it's, you know, a couple years old or whatever. It's a fairly new tracking dog. And he's like, well, I'll give Jeff a call and, you know, we can bring the dog out and it might help a lot or whatever. Just so we're not just randomly searching, cause we couldn't find any more blood. And so he came out. And the dog really had nothing. You know, he followed it a little bit, you know, on something that might have been a trail. But, you know, we did that for a while. And then we're like, yeah, that's not really going to work out. So we just started grid searching and doing whatever. And there was nothing. And what I think happened is, I'm guessing it was quartering to me a little bit. And I think I hit it in the front shoulder enough to shock the spine. So it, you know, glitched out and fell and started twitching and whatnot. And then once it kind of recovered, you know, I think I got into the shoulder, but I didn't punch through it. Just, you know, being a 44 mag and stuff, it didn't have enough power to go through it.
I'm almost curious, just based off of your description, like, if you were quartering away, I wonder if you just hit, like you said, hit that front shoulder and you just had, like, muscle blood, and that's why you didn't find any more.
That's what I'm guessing, is it just, it didn't punch anything, or it didn't hit anything important. You know, I just hit either a bone or something that it just shocked the system enough for it to freak out and fall down and whatever, do what they do. but it didn't hit anything vital. You know, it definitely didn't pass through. Yeah. I think I just tagged that shoulder. And, I mean, the deer's probably going to live. You know, it's probably out there walking around now. And that's why I think it kind of stumbled off, because that leg was like, oh, fuck, you know. But
just have a bunch of rotting meat like the buck that I got last year.
Yeah, it's definitely not good for it. Yeah. You know, it sucks.
Well, it does suck, but you also, things. Especially getting a dog out there, doing a grid search, whatever. I mean, I feel like you did pretty much everything you could do.
We spent
to recover that deer.
A good 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
Looking around for it, and I don't, you know, if it would have been critically injured, we would have found more blood, or the dog would have found it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So I think it's fine.
If you had hit something weird.
Deer are freaking tough, too.
Oh, yeah.
Well, even if you had hit something weird where, let's say it was quartering two, and, you know, it, like, you hit, like, right on the leg bone, you know, the thicker part of the shoulder, if you will, and it just, like, deflected into the guts or something like
right.
that, and you didn't have blood, the dog would still track that.
Yeah.
Because it's still going to leave behind all that scent. So.
Oh, for sure.
I would agree with you where it probably, like, and I don't know, that blood spot, maybe it, like, bedded down for a minute and then got up and, like, who knows?
I think it probably stood there for a second.
Could have been, yeah.
It probably, you know, I shot, it went down, it got back up, it went and was like, what the fuck was that?
Right.
And then it, you know, continued on its day. And probably once it stood there for a second, that's probably when I was moving towards it.
Yeah, and it just kind of
moseyed off, you know, and whatever.
Yeah.
If I would have had, you know, a scoped rifle or binoculars or really anything, where when I first saw that dark spot, I could have, you know, identified and said, oh, yep, that's a deer. And that's, you know, this part of the deer or whatever.
You'd probably never hunt without him again, though.
Yeah, probably not. It really screwed me, and it really bums me out. You know, because that was my one opportunity at you know, deer camp that I had, and, you know, I just messed it up.
The good news is you have already been successful this year.
That's one thing that's really cool, and it totally took the pressure off. You know, I wasn't like, oh, my God, I got to get a, you know, it was like, I already got 2 deer in the freezer. You know, I'm not too worried about it. You know, there was a couple mornings I slept in and didn't get out there till 8:30, you know, 9 o'clock. Just because it was like, yeah, fuck it, I'm on vacation.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing now is, like, I think a lot of guys put so much pressure on hunting. Like, if you're going to hunt all day, like, oh, we need to get out there early in the morning. And it's definitely smart in a lot of instances to get out there. But we're approaching that time of the year where the deer are just not going to be active early on in the morning. You know, like, I'll tell you straight up, like, late season bow hunting especially, if I'm going to hunt in the morning, I won't even attempt to go out there until like 10 o'clock just because whatever activity is happening in the morning is happening while it's still dark outside. And then I'll slip in there like, you know, an hour or so after it gets light and sit, you know, basically. So I have midday and all afternoon because we know a lot of bucks are shot at 12:30, 1 o'clock, 1:30, 2:30.
That's the thing we kind of figured out is, a couple years ago, it was like, okay, when are we shooting the deer that we shoot?
Yeah.
And it's usually right around lunchtime.
Yep.
And part of that is because that's just when the, you know, deer are out and about. But then part of that is because everyone leaves and goes back to their cabin.
Yep.
Right around 11 o'clock.
Yep.
So it's like, why are we getting up at the freaking ass crack of dawn and getting out there 45 minutes before light when we don't see deer till, you know, noon or 1?
Yeah, let's get up at 9:30. Get out there at 10 and sit for an hour or so and hopefully see deer in that, you know, in that time frame.
Yeah, and usually we would get up, and like what we were doing this year, we were getting up on the couple of days that we did get out there a little later. We would get up at, you know, 8 or whatever, get out there by 9, and then you sit for the rest of the day.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing I should say. If I'm going out at 10 o'clock, I'm not taking a lunch break.
But
I'll get in the stand at 10, and I'll sit until, you know, 5:30, whenever it gets dark, and then that's it.
Right, but it's a lot easier to sit. You know, if you sit all day, you know, you're wasting your 3 hours. So by the time, you know, noon, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock comes around, mm-hmm. you're kind of uncomfortable, you're ready to move, you
for
know,
sure.
whatever. Where if you bump that back a little later, you can sit comfortably for, you know, throughout those important hours.
Yeah, and that's the other thing I've noticed on an all-day sit is, like, there's at least one point in the day, especially now when I do an all-day sit and I'm in the saddle, like, that just gets uncomfortable to sit there for 8 hours. And I've got a really nice saddle, and I've been doing it for a while, and I've, you know, I've got all the fancy stuff to make it as comfortable as possible. And I could do it, but at a certain point, you just want to move around a little bit.
Right.
And so...
And it gets to the point where it's like, yeah, we're hunting, and that's what we do, and whatever.
But, like, why are we suffering?
But, like, yeah, like you know, it's a deer camp. You want to have fun. You want to, you know, you don't want to come home completely exhausted and wiped out and go back to work on Tuesday. And
yeah,
it's like, oh, my God, I'm just freaking whipped.
So a lot of times in the saddle, what I'll do is I'll, even something as simple as just, like, standing all the way up on my platform, and I'll stand with, like, my back towards the tree as if I'm hunting and standing on, like, a traditional hang-on stand or something like that, and I'll just stand for, you know, 40 minutes or something like that, maybe an hour, and just stand on the edge of my platform rather than lean against the saddle, and that'll give a little bit of a break. It's also a good time to take a piss, because, okay, I got a question for you guys. Do you piss out of the deer stand?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
There was a while
so
where
we have a couple different setups. My grandpa has garden hoses with funnels stuck into them so he can just piss in the deer blind and it runs outside.
That's awesome.
My mom
also
thinks
probably
it's
smells disgusting.
I think it's funny as
I was
it's
pissing,
funny. I'm
I
sure
was pissing
I
my think ground it's, blind this year.
Out I think of your ground blind?
Yeah, so like I just have the window or whatever and you just kind of stand on your tippy toes and like...
Well, if you're an average height, you don't have to stand on your tippy toes to piss out the ground blind.
Dude, I'm perfectly average. 5'9"?
Okay. 5'7".
Or you just stretch that big old thing out the window.
We're not all lucky like you, Jared.
Anyways. No, so we've got that, and then we've got, like, coffee cans and stuff. And
coffee cans. I could never piss.
My mom has to do that.
Oh, yeah, that would
women
make sense.
Women pissing
yeah.
coffee cans. Yeah. And then there's also, we have a 5-gallon pail with a toilet seat on it.
Nice.
My mom is like, I'm never using that thing. Really, we'll see.
Good old shit bucket.
Shit bucket.
And then.
Did you ever watch that? There's a, used to be a YouTube channel they might still upload. It was called Battlefield Friends. They'd upload like skits or whatever.
No.
And they're like, if you're going to the bathroom, you're not playing Battlefield. If you're shitting in a bucket, you're playing Battlefield. I was just like, they're just talking about like the sweats or whatever. So it's like, if you're going to the bathroom, you're not hunting. But if you're shitting in a bucket, you're still hunting.
You just grab that tree and lean back. And
in the saddle, you could. You totally could.
Yeah. Oh,
you could bring the saddle up to your back and then you could just squat.
So here's my question. Would you rather lean on a tree or lean away from a tree holding on to it?
I just kind of.
Like, if you got shit in the woods.
I don't use a tree.
You just squat?
You yeah. squat down and hope you don't shit right into your pants?
No, he takes his pants probably completely off.
He's just one shirt cocking it.
No, you just kind of got to lean a little bit, but it works.
To answer your question, kinda, Jared, lean against a tree. Put my back against a tree.
Oh, yeah.
Typically.
My dad said the same thing, so I always questioned it because like, I'm more of a grab a tree that I can get one hand on but is strong enough to hold me up and then lean away from it. And let her rip.
My sister for Christmas got me one of those crap straps.
I've seen those.
Yeah.
What?
It's a strap that's like a saddle. It goes around the tree, but it goes on your back, and then you just squat down, and you're allowed to just like, let her eat.
Yeah.
That way you can still scroll TikTok.
The only problem is it's super heavy, and I just don't want to carry it.
What do you mean it's super heavy?
It's heavy. It's like a big thing.
So it's like weighs less than a pound, buddy.
No, fuck no.
My saddle weighs less than a pound.
This is not your saddle.
All right, then it's old. I use a Tethered Phantom saddle, and they have a new one, but I love that thing, dude.
Really?
Yeah, shout out Tethered. You're even just though nobody's listening.
Cut a hole in it.
Yeah. Yeah, I cut a big-ass hole in it, and it's like, I don't know why my ass is falling through the saddle all the time.
Speaking of bathroom breaks and hunting, let's get into my deer camp. Ish.
Hold on. Were you
done?
Did you have anything to
add? I think I'm about done. That was about it. You know, it was a good deer camp. We had a group of four guys up there this year for most of the time. Had a couple people pop in. on Sunday night, which is always fun. Different random people. You know, we played a bunch of poker, drank a lot of whiskey.
That's really what deer camp's about. Did you cook any chili?
We didn't cook chili. Actually, we didn't even eat chili. But we cooked some bear that my dad had that he got this year.
Nice.
You know, I made a venison stew.
You make a venison stew with the deer that you shot?
I made a venison meatloaf.
From this year's deer?
Yes. The stew was from... I had two pieces of meat in the stew. One of them was from last year's buck. One of them was from this year's doe.
But that's always rewarding, is being able to eat venison from... Like, at, you know, like for me, I don't go to deer camp, but like, let's say I get home from a deer hunt and my mom has made like venison stew or venison tacos. Like, I love tacos, so
yeah.
Venison tacos or something like that. And it's from that season already.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's a good ass feeling.
Yep.
Yeah, that's always good.
It's like when I brought in tea steaks and they were from last year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Jared brought in tenderloins. We grilled them up at the shop.
See, I am jealous about that. Because I'm on the road most days, so.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet.
Yeah. I've got, actually, let's do that next podcast, because I got a bunch of them. So I'll bring in a couple of the back straps from this year, because I've got three. three deers worth, so six back straps total.
Hell
so
yeah.
I'll bring a couple of them, and we'll have Jared cook them up. Why is that funny?
I'll cook. Because Jared had me cook the tenderloins.
Hey, man, I can cook on my smoker.
No, he cooked, what did you cook? Was that just a flank steak or was that backstrap that we ate?
Those were probably backstraps.
Yeah, it was, he did a great job.
Really?
It was awesome.
Well, did I marinate those?
No, it was frozen.
They were sliced.
It was frozen, remember?
Oh, what did I do? What did I put on them?
I think it was just salt and pepper.
Oh.
Well, that's what, like,
maybe salt, pepper, garlic.
He texted me the night before, and he's like, "Hey, don't bring lunch tomorrow, but bring some seasoning for some tenderloins."
There you go.
Yeah, I don't have like anything.
I know, and I was like, "I just brought salt, pepper, and garlic." I was like, "Dude, you don't have fucking salt, pepper, and garlic? Like, what the hell?"
Oh yeah, I have that. I just didn't know. Like, so the reason I said that is because my parents got all fancy and they had like Brazilian steak seasoning that they put on.
Oh, dude, that McCormick's Brazilian Steakhouse. Delicious. That's good shit.
No, I love the original McCormick steak seasoning.
Like Montreal?
Montreal, yeah. I love that.
Those
shit.
Are the two Montreal's go-tos, Montreal steak and Brazilian steakhouse.
I think the reason I like Montreal is because it has black pepper in it.
Yeah.
Or the I guess, peppercorns.
But we've also done like Caribbean jerk marinated.
Caribbean, yeah. I've had Caribbean jerk venison.
Teriyaki once, and it was okay.
I'm not a huge teriyaki guy. Yeah, I don't like teriyaki anyway. Oh, so on venison, yeah. It's just kind of like, eh.
I do like Caribbean jerk, though. You go to
Caribbean
Buffalo Wild Wings.
Pretty good.
Caribbean jerk is my go-to.
Caribbean jerk's pretty good.
You can do hot sauce, too, like wing sauce.
Oh, I've done.
Buffalo.
On
I've
venison?
Done,
yeah.
No, I've done like Frank's Red Hot with it.
Mm-hmm.
No, like, you literally didn't. Just salt and pepper and then, you know, dip it in some Frank's Red Hot.
You know what I've done?
You marinate it first, then cook it.
I've never done that.
You know what I've done?
It's not
bad. You take the hot and spicy Cheez-Its, and you crush them up, and you use it as a breading.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Another way I like to cook venison is country fried deer steaks.
So also, when you make your meatloaf and you put breadcrumbs in it,
yeah,
use either pork rinds.
Oh, yeah.
It's really good. Yep. Or use the fucking jalapeno, cheddar, whatever Cheez-Its, because I bet you that would be good.
I bet that would be good. I never thought of that. I made a badass meatloaf, though.
Do you do the ketchup thing on top?
No. I make a special sauce.
Me neither. Oh, you make a special sauce.
It's a special sauce.
Anyway, let's hear about Jared's deer camp.
Remind me not to eat Justin's meatloaf.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, so let's see. Well, so 2 weeks ago, or like the week before opener, the weekend before, a local guy there in Boone, he kind of hosts a buck poll, so he has a party the Saturday before opening, and that's your chance to kind of enter into the buck poll. So I went to that. It was decent. And then I was able to get Friday off, you know, worked out to where I was able to hunt opening day. So I went down to my parents Thursday night, and we always host a, not really party, but like get together with some of the local guys in the area that like to come over, that they've been around there forever. Do we end up actually having a pretty decent turnout this year? Cooked up some venison. We always watch Escanaba in the moonlight. It's a tradition.
Really?
That's actually in one in the Instagram post. You can see us sitting there looking goofy, like we're all cheering or something.
Yeah.
We're doing the...
I loved those pictures.
We're doing the Nanamo dance when they're drinking the moose ball milkshake, dancing around the burn barrel, and the dude's out there shaking around whatnot. We're reenacting it. That's what's going on in that photo. And then, that was kind of after everyone left. Before everyone left, my mom thought it was a great idea to get out some peach pie moonshine and polish off two jars of that stuff.
Don't ask me. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I wasn't there, dude.
I don't remember.
I'm sure then, you don't, if it was two, especially.
Yeah, and then we had more than we should have to drink. It was a good little pre-opener deer party, and then Thursday morning, woke up bright and early to Tom there smacking me across my back. He and I bachelored it out in the pole barn on air mattresses, and we went out to the swamp blind. So growing
this
up...
Is Thursday morning?
Or, yeah, Friday morning.
Okay.
Yeah, Thursday night is when I went down there. Friday morning. And so growing up, I always hunted the swamp blind. And then when I went out to college, Tom was finally allowed to start hunting the land. And he went out to the swamp. And he's had pretty good luck there. He's gotten big bucks. And he usually gets them within a few days of sitting. He hasn't really had to do a whole lot of long sits. So we went out there and, you know, it's a spot I grew up with. I was being nice. I gave him three of the shooting lanes. I took two of them. I took the better spot.
You guys were sitting in the same blind?
Yeah, we were sitting in the same blind. We were sharing. Because my grandpa was also supposed to hunt. He ended up not hunting, though, because my grandma has an injury. But, so he ended up going out with me and, I gave him three lanes. I took the better spot, but he had more opportunity. And then there was a bit of complaining from his end, but it was all good. We had a good day sitting together, and then right around probably 11, I had to walk back up to the house to go to the bathroom and take a little 3-hour nap because I was very hungover. Both of us were. Yeah. My mom was. My dad was. Everyone from the deer party was hungover.
That'll do
it. I mean, my parents were texting the guys that were at the party. They're like, "You guys feeling okay?" They're like, "Hell no. Got a big old headache from that damn peach pie moonshine."
Yeah. Dude, I don't know what it is. I didn't mean to cut you off, but something about just like sugar and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Sugar and alcohol gives you
terrible.
Bad headache.
Oh, yeah. That's what gives you the hangovers.
Yeah, most sugar. Of the time.
So, yeah, went up, had a nice little 3-hour nap, and went back out probably around 2. And we saw a few deer the first day, nothing great. And then the second day, I did not hunt the morning hunt. I ended up hunting the afternoon. Tom went and sat in my grandpa's old blind. And I had the swamp to myself. I saw a 6-point. It just looks like the biggest 6-point you've ever seen. It's huge. But it has, like, it's just very tall with thick beams. And then it forks right at the top. And then it's got decent brow tines, but nothing great. So we're waiting that one. We're hoping next year it gets a little wider, spreads out. It'll turn into a nice buck. So we let that one go. And then there's a spike that has one spike that's half the size of the other. So he's a little goofy. And then saw a few does. And Tom ended up getting that 6-point that night at my grandpa's spot, super short tracking. I mean, he got a little bit of lung, obliterated the heart. Think the thing probably ran 40 yards, if that. I mean, it didn't go anywhere.
It's always nice when that happens.
Yep, it was a good shot. That's one thing. I mean, every deer that he has shot on our property, we've never had to track it far. It's always been right through the vitals, right through the heart.
Oh, so he's a good shot then.
Oh, yeah. He's always been a good shot. And he didn't really grow up hunting. So he's kind of, I don't know where he gets it from, but he's a damn good shot.
Yeah.
So, and then the other thing is, for the longest time, I was using this 30-06, and then he started using it too. So he used my gun, my spot. And so we went out there, and I'm like, well, yeah, we'll share the gun. And I'm like, yeah, that's not going to work out. So I brought my muzzle loader, and then he got his deer, so I was able to use that gun again. It's when we just put that new Leopold scope on. So I was able to use that again when I went out on Sunday, and I saw a 4-point, and I was sitting there trying to figure out how to make this thing legal. It had... So my dad kind of has like an 8-point or more rule right now, unless it's goofy. Like if it's got bad genetics, he wants it taken out. So if it doesn't have brow tines or something like that,
yeah,
he wants it out of there. But other than that, it's 8 points or more. And I'm looking at this thing and I'm like, well, this thing's got bad genetics. And, you know, it's missing brow tine on that side. Like he's to the point where even if it only has one brow tine, he wants it gone.
Did it have 3 points on one side?
It did not. That was the issue. That's why it was a 4-point. So it had a brow tine.
Oh, so you have to be.
And then a single beam.
Yeah.
And then it had a beam with a fork on the end. And then it had a brow tine, but it was too short to be a legal point. Because it's got to be an inch long.
So you got to have, in that area, you got to have three or better.
You
got
to have three or more on one side, yeah.
Because, like, up in my cabin.
Yeah,
because like
you were texting me. You're like, shoot him. And I'm like, well, can't, for starters. And then you were asking about the does, and I'm like, also, can't do that. Like, right now, my dad is, we can only take smaller does because he wants the big ones or better breeders. And then he also would prefer us to hold off until Thanksgiving before shooting a doe.
Right.
That way.
Yeah, they're in lockdown.
Yeah.
That makes sense from a property management standpoint.
Yeah.
Up at
dude,
my cabin.
Your dad,
they didn't...
I would.
Well, yeah, you saw
complete
the picture
side note,
of that
but I would really,
food plot.
Yeah, no, I would love to talk to your dad about deer management on the property because he has a plethora of knowledge on that.
Yeah, he's getting there is what he says, I think. He's to the point where we all think he could manage other people's property for them as well. And he even had a few people ask him if he would. And we're like, you go for it. Have a side business. Make some more money. I mean, you do this stuff for fun. Do it to make a little money, too.
And he's
and
obviously
you're
very
enjoy
successful.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He enjoys it.
His biggest
very
thing, though, is he doesn't want it to be where he goes and manages someone's property and it's really terrible soil where it takes a few years to get it to be good. So you're not going to see a good food plot there for a little while. And then also, that person doesn't get good deer coming into their property for a few years. Because it takes a while. It's not an instantaneous thing.
Right. Well,
so
like,
you're playing the long game.
He's worried that people are going to get upset that he's charging money and they're not seeing results immediately.
No, he needs to be working with the right type of people. Which
like,
I think, you know.
The thing is, they're paying you to go do work on their land.
Yeah.
Doesn't really, it's out of your control after that.
Well, and the thing for me, like, I have thought a lot about, like I really want a deer property. I'm sure, like, you guys are the same way. You'd love to have your own property to be able to manage it. But, like, my expectation, if I were to buy a piece of property, I wouldn't expect to, unless I bought the property and had a shooter on camera that just happened to be in the area, I wouldn't expect to have a shooter on that property for probably 3 or 4 years just because I want to, you know, and that's tricky because you have to have a large enough property to keep bucks on the property. But it's also like you have to put in the work to be able to allow those deer to mature. And the problem is if you have, you know, and Like, it's just the unfortunate truth. If you have a 10-acre parcel and you're surrounded by big ag country, you know, there's only so much you can do to keep your deer on the property. So then you have a 10-acre parcel, and there's four other dudes next to you that are hunting that have a 10-acre parcel surrounded by big ag, and they don't give a shit about shooting a big buck. They just want to shoot a buck. Yeah. So that 6-point walks through, and it's a legal buck, and he just puts it down.
That's one of the nice things kind of in our area. Most of the people that it's a very small town. Everyone kind of knows everyone for the most part. And the guys that are big into hunting and land management, I mean, we're all kind of right next to each other, and we all kind of, you know, we agree. For the longest time, it was just my uncle and the guy who hosts the buck poll had an 8-point agreement, and now my dad's kind of gotten some of the other guys around the area to join in on that. So we are starting to see, you know, more bigger bucks. The one issue that we have is we've got some new neighbors just bought property right next to us from a guy who passed away, our old neighbor. And then on the other side of us, we've got public land. The issue is no one can get in there. It's bad, thick swamp. It's the type of deal like Justin's talking about, jack pine, but this is a really thick cedar swamp.
Is it landlocked or no?
It's, yeah.
Yeah. But for lack of better terms.
Yeah. You really, it's not really accessible from the road.
Yeah. Well, and that's the...
There is one spot. There is a guy who has a blind set up on public land right on the corner of our property with windows facing our property. Pisses us off. But he has permission to go through a farmer's field and use a ladder to get over the high fence and into his deer blind.
Mm.
So... Because this farmer has high fence surrounding his fields to keep the deer out, but
yeah,
the dumbass leaves the gates open and deer get in there and can't figure out how to get out.
That's tough.
Yeah, whatever.
I'm not sure if you were finished with that, but are you done with your opening day, or did you have something else to add to that?
No, that was, I mean, pretty much it. You know, that 3-point came in and... that same spike from the other day came in with him, and I just kind of watched them till dark.
Yeah.
Unfortunately didn't get anything. Didn't really see much else. You know, today would have been great to be out there today.
Yep.
Yeah, big old buck came in around 11.
That was a nice buck.
And then this is the best part. My dad texted me again at 4:30. He goes, "That buck just came in again. It's been here for half an hour."
Oh my God.
You need to be out there this weekend for sure.
Tomorrow I'm going to see if I can get out of here at like 2:30 and hopefully be in the blind by 3:30. Hunt for 2 hours, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it, man. I mean.
And hopeful. I just don't want to screw anything up by going back there so late.
That does suck.
You just got sneaky.
You might want to drive as far as you can back there.
Well, I'll probably just walk back there. Driving is worse. Got a loud truck.
Yeah, if you can sneak up on him, I don't know how open that field is, but.
Oh, where I hunt?
Yeah.
No, there's nothing open about it. You got to walk through a bunch of woods and stuff, and then that little food plot that I'm at is the only opening in that whole area.
Oh, okay.
And then there's, like, once you get out of the woods, there's another kind of field, but it's all starting to kind of grow up now because it's been untouched. It used to be my cousin's dirt bike track. Quad track when they were little kids.
Yeah.
But it's all covered in pines, and my dad plants fruit trees and stuff back there, so it's not really much of a field anymore nowadays anyways. So yeah, that food plot's the only open spot back there.
That's cool.
So it's not too bad to kind of try and sneak
in. I think you'll if you hunt hard, I think you have a good opportunity to see him. Is that the first time he's shown up on camera there?
So I'm trying to figure out if that's one that he has seen before or not, because he jokingly, I don't know if he was joking or serious, but he goes, "That's 140 inches all day." And I'm like, well,
it's a 10 point.
I'm like, that'd be sweet.
The one side definitely looks like a 10 point.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is we have a 9 back there.
It might be a 9.
We have a 9 back there, but I don't think it was that big. So
So here's the thing. I'm gonna.
And this is the problem with trail cams.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Right here, you get all excited and you hold out for the big buck, and then you pass up on the decent ones. And
well, you got two tags, buddy.
The big one never shows up.
Yeah.
If there's one worth shooting, shoot him.
I never put out any trail cams this year.
So, I'm gonna get into.
Our problem is we have the ones connected to phone, so you get it immediately.
Right.
And it's yeah.
That's what I do, but I have the notifications turned off, so I have to open the app to check it.
Yeah,
and it helps
my dad
me
has all the notifications on.
Being addicted. So I can't load the Instagram post to prove to you guys that this is a doe, but this buck was taken, or
oh,
this doe,
the antler doe,
was taken November 10th, 2024, from Berry County, Michigan. Private property, compound bow. It does not say the gentleman's name, but 30-yard shot, antler doe in the state of Michigan. So I did some research to figure out why this happens.
It doesn't look like a doe.
It doesn't look like a doe, but in the picture, in the next pictures, if I was on Instagram, you'd be able to see the nipples. So it's really weird.
What's the page that it posted on?
Michigan Buck Poll. And you'd have to scroll down a ways because they post, you know, every day right now. There's people shooting deer.
Really? Jesus.
But.
Not me.
Hard to believe.
Yeah, yeah. No kidding.
What?
But I did some research as to why this happens and found a Meat Eater article. Basically, their explanation is it is pretty much just. My initial reaction was that it was some sort of genetic mutation that causes a female to throw a rack, similar to like how caribou would, because female caribou will also, you know, grow antlers like we know. So that was my initial thought, but according to this Meat Eater article, a lot of times it, like, if a doe just has an abnormal amount of adrenaline, usually caused by some sort of injury or high levels of stress, they will grow a rack, which is really, really weird that like gene can turn on,
it's
and they're
just
like
right there waiting to happen.
Yeah, and they just, if they have enough testosterone, they'll grow a rack. But typically, it's like a spike or a weird 6-point rack. It's usually not a fully developed rack, and a lot of times they stay in velvet. And so this is a hard horned 8-point, which is really strange.
Yeah,
yeah, I've never seen one. I have seen the like spikes and stuff.
Yeah.
But I've never seen one like that. And that, I mean,
have
that
you,
freaking looks
do you
like
have
one.
It in front of you?
I'm trying to find it.
So this is it's
the,
funny because
what's the picture look like,
my
man?
Parents look and some one. Of the guys on the buck poll or the deer party, they were talking about it because it was, you know, it was new news right then.
Yeah, for sure.
And they're like, "Can you believe that?" And, you know, I was like, "That's crazy." And then I was cracking up because, you know, there's always the joke of your phone's listening to you. I'm scrolling through Facebook in the deer blind the next day, and there's this post about, you might not believe this, but female deer can grow antlers, and it's like a female deer in a museum that has antlers, and it was kind of like you said, more typical for this scenario, where it's all jacked up and doesn't look like it belongs there.
Yep.
It looks goofy or abnormal antler growth.
Yeah, and that's not a perfect 8-point rack, but it definitely looks more typical than what we're used to seeing
yeah.
from.
Well, this
from
this one in the rack. Museum was very atypical, and I'm like, yeah, wonder why that's coming up, but it's probably also just because the event just happened, and I follow a lot of the Michigan hunting pages. So
I mean, it's 100% because your phone's listening to you, but whatever.
Yeah,
no, I'm just kidding. So, I mean, as far as my opener went, I was not expecting to hunt opener. I didn't take the day off. It was a Friday, so I figured I'd just hunt that Saturday. Ended up being able to hunt opening day, although I didn't hunt the morning because I got home late from work and just kind of wanted to take a break. I hadn't been able to sleep in my own room or in my own bed all week. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to sleep in. I'm going to get some rest, and then I'll get after it in the afternoon. So I sat actually where Jared sat for early antler lists. Oh. But the problem was I was surrounded by...
I was sitting in the spot that I had.
One of the other guys that hunts the property regularly, it was his dad.
Okay.
So you guys know I have that 9 or 10. I can't really tell from the trail camera, but that big buck on camera. And
What date was that posted?
November 10th.
I can't find it.
Anyway, the I don't know when it was posted. It was taken. I don't know. Anyway, I have that big buck on camera, and I was really excited to get out there and hunt because I was like, oh, that buck's been here recently, because I got a picture of him. I think it was November 7th, and I was hunting, you know, the 15th. And so I was like, man, like, I'm excited, whatever. Come to find out, there's a guy hunting the what would be the northeast property or part of the property and saw a 10 point. He doesn't think it's the same one, but I was like, dude, we've got multiple shooters on the property, whatever. Unfortunately, he missed the shot. So that part sucks, but gives me an opportunity to shoot him. So tomorrow I'm hoping to hunt that spot where he's at. And I didn't see anything. I had some does come in after shooting light, unfortunately, but I was mostly surrounded by little, like, small deer, you know, fawns and button bucks and a bunch of yearlings. And
right.
I actually watched two button bucks bang their head together like they were antler fighting. It was pretty funny. I was like, yeah, they're okay. That's funny. But, yeah, man, I just did not have anything come in. And there's like this little, I guess it would technically be an apple tree. I don't really know what kind of fruit grows on it, but the deer are over there. Like, you know, I think it's like a screwed up crab apple tree. But they're over like at the base of this tree, and the young ones are like munching around. The bigger does are like out in the food plot.
Yeah.
But they're over this hill, and it's unfortunate because if it was flat, it's like a 130-yard shot. Like, I'm dialed. I'm good. But I had to wait for them to come up over the hill, and they're smart because they waited until, like, last light to really come out. And so I'm, like, getting a shot lined up. I had, like, 2 minutes left of legal light, and I'm like, I don't know, whatever. And so I'm waiting for her to turn and, like, get a shot off. And then by the time I actually got my scope on her and, like, was getting ready to take a shot, it was too dark for me to be able to see and like, feel comfortable about it. So that part kind of sucked. But, no, I mean, just like typical opening day, you know, we heard a lot of different shots. And even that night, I heard probably 4 or 5 shots. And there were several people who ended up shooting some nice deer, including my brother's girlfriend, Mackenzie. Did I send you guys the picture of that buck that she shot?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Let me pull that up for you. She shot a nice 8 point, and it was actually her first deer. So, or her first buck, rather. So this is my brother. I will say my brother, that little fucker, not so little fucker, but he is the luckiest person ever, because his second deer I showed you earlier was that 8 point. He's like 120-inch 8 point, pretty typical for like Michigan 8 point, you know, just a solid whatever.
Right.
And then, last year, he went out for one sit, shot a doe. This year, he goes out first sit with his girlfriend, and she shoots this.
Damn. That thing's tall.
Yeah, I was tall. It's a nice buck.
Yeah, that
and
ain't
so
slouch.
I never saw it in person, but my brother says that it's bigger than his buck. So I'm like, damn, dude, like, that's a nice deer. So, like, congratulations, you ruined deer hunting in the state of Michigan for you for the rest of your life. But
oh, that was... We all joke that Tom kind of did that when he first got his buck. I don't know. I don't think I posted that one, but he nicknamed it Buford. And it was an 11 point, but the thing had broken off drop tines. It had starting kickers and all sorts of crazy stuff going on. I mean, the thing could have potentially been like 14 points if it didn't have all these broken off
damn
things.
I mean, it was crazy. Yeah, it was a slob.
It is really cool.
But, I mean, it was badass deer. But we joked that he totally ruined hunting.
I wanted to, so I recently purchased that lever action 30-30.
Did you bring that?
Western Field. I did. It's in the truck.
Oh, sweet. We got to check that out.
So it's made by Marlin, like way back in the day. I think that it's like their budget friendly thing, I guess, maybe. I don't really know, but I'll have you look at it. I think just from using it that it's very high quality, and I love the gun. But the problem with it is that I had to change the ammo, and so
what you should use is the Hornady.
I know what I should use.
Leverution.
But I have a box of just 150 grain right now. I'm going to shoot those and get it sighted in for that, and then I'm going to use those shell casings to reload, because I'm going to buy a press for that and develop like
Dies.
My own. Yeah, I'm going to buy. Well, I don't know. I'm going to see. I'm going to look into it and just, I think it's smarter, not for like my 308, but I'm going to buy a designated bolt gun next year for deer hunting.
Yeah.
And then I'll have the lever action, and I can go back and forth between those two. But I want to have, specifically for the 30-30, I want to have custom rounds, because I think I can get it. Like, I think I can do like a little bit hotter of a round and be able to stretch my range with that gun to 150, because right now
those Leverution bullets or whatever for the 30-30 are really solid, and you can get out to 200-300 yards.
Okay, because the deer season
300 might be pushing
deer it, season XP is round nose.
Yeah, don't use that.
Right, but it says maximum effective yardage is like 120, so
yeah,
it kind of sucks. But you know, obviously I was hunting with my 308, the AR-10.
Right.
But yeah, I am excited for that gun and to build that out and whatever. Also, something I'm excited for tomorrow, I'm going to go shoot the new Hoyt and Matthews bow, which I'm very excited for. So
at Gothier's?
At Gothier's, yeah. So I think I already know which one I'm going to buy, because I am planning on buying a new hunting bow based on this release.
The Hoyt?
And I'll tell you why. No, I'm not going to buy the Hoyt.
Why?
Because if I had to, I shouldn't say I'm not going to buy the Hoyt. I would guess I'm not going to buy the Hoyt, because my theory is basically this. Because I've been shooting Matthews bows for so long, and because I shoot my 3D bow like constantly, and I love the way that bow shoots and feels, the Matthews draw cycle is what I'm going to be used to, and therefore is going to feel more natural to me compared to like the Hoyt or even a PSE draw cycle that is very different. It just has a different feel to the bow. So to me, those bows are going to feel better because that's what I'm used to. But Matthews released a new bow based off of last year's bow, but it's called the Lift RS, and it's a very short axle-to-axle bow. It's 27 3/4 inches axle-to-axle.
Holy shit.
It weighs 3.92 pounds, so it's the same weight as my Creed, but it goes up to 80 pounds, and its maximum draw length is 29 inches, which is my draw length. So I'm going to shoot 29 inches at 80 pounds, and the IBO speed of that thing is 353 feet per second. So I'm hoping to get, with a 460 grain arrow, I'm hoping to get about 310 out of that. But I will chronograph it once I build the bow. I'll chronograph it at Gothier's.
Oh, okay.
Or I'll buy a chronograph. I want a chronograph just to know like what my actual numbers are.
You should buy one.
I've been wanting to buy one for
Justin,
a while.
You should really buy one because you do reloads.
Yeah. I feel like
I
need one. But
regardless of all that, what I'm excited for is being able to build that bow and stretch my distances, because I know based off of my accuracy that I could shoot a deer at 60 yards. I just don't have the speed to do it right now with my current hunting setup.
Yeah.
And what I didn't want to sacrifice was my weight of my hunting setup for like last year's bows, even though the Lift was one of the lightest bows on the market, or the lightest bow on the market last year in the 29.5 configuration. The Lift RS is even that much lighter. It's the same base weight as the Creed, and I'm going to have a very similar setup to that. So that would be my guess as far as the bow I'm going to shoot, or what I'll end up going with. But I want to go there tomorrow. I want to shoot them, get an actual experience. I was going to do it today, but I didn't get out of work in time, and because I wanted to have the information for the podcast. But to me, it's I enjoy shooting everything just so you know what's on the market. But you know, the Matthews draw cycle is something that I just it's just a different feel, and I think that I'm just more comfortable with that.
Yeah, when I shot your bow, it's drastically different than my prime.
Yeah, so the difference with that is it's also a solo cam. So those bows were designed to be smooth shooting.
It is so smooth.
Like, versus my 3D bow, which is a Traverse, that's a dual cam split limb setup.
Mm-hmm.
That bow, it shoots very different from the Creed. It has a similar draw cycle and is still smooth, but I don't think it's as smooth as the solo cam.
I'd be curious to shoot that thing, because like when I shot your bow, when we were shooting out here that one day or whatever, and yeah. I shot your bow,
yeah,
I went home and started looking at Matthew's bows. Because yeah, I was like, God damn, that thing was sweet.
They're smooth, and it was super light.
And it's super light.
Because your bow, now I shot your bow, and your bow has a rock solid back wall, which I love. I love a very stiff back wall.
Yeah.
Still had a smooth draw cycle.
Mm-hmm.
It was very different because the aggressive part of the draw cycle is at the back end compared to the front end, which
right.
most of Matthews are front end aggressive. But the thing that I didn't like about your bow is how heavy it is.
It is
very heavy.
Very heavy.
Yeah. It's also a 33-inch axle-to-axle bow.
Yeah.
So, like, Jared's bow is short. I think the Craze is 28 inches axle-to-axle, I believe so.
That seems like Prime doesn't even make that. They make a 30.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's how Matthews has been for the past several years. Now, I almost bought a V327 because Matthews came out with the V327. It's 27 inches axle-to-axle. Perfect tree stand bow. But now they don't have it wasn't as much of a change. Like it still maxed out. I think it had 75 pound mods at that point. So I could have shot 75 pounds, but like all the accessories and whatnot, they didn't have all their inline and bridge line stuff. So it was like, it wasn't as streamlined, whatever. It wasn't a big enough change for me, but now Matthews has a system on their limbs. I wish I could remember the name of it, but on the new bows, you don't need a bow press to tune the bows anymore. Like, you can essentially yoke tune without a bow press now, because it's got a little screw in the axle that you move back and forth, and that will shift the limb to one side or the other and get you to shoot a perfect true center shot. So you can set up your rest to shoot like a perfect true center shot, and then you can essentially yoke tune with this new setup. Which I yoke tune on my solo cam because they go all the way to the outside up top. And so I would yoke tune with that all the time to get like a perfect shot. But now you can do it with these new bows, and it's really cool. It replaced what Matthew's old tuning system, which was the top hats. And you have to take the entire axle out, slip a shim in there. That's the top hat tuning, and it was a fuck show.
Yeah.
But now they've got this new screw-in system, and so you combine that with their bridge lock, specifically the bridge lock sights, because I shoot a dovetail sight anyway, and I have been slowly switching to slider sights more and more, like for hunting and whatnot. They got a really low profile quiver that's even tighter than a tight spot, which is freaking sweet, and it's still detachable, or you can get the fixed version. The one thing I'm not sold on are the Matthews stabilizers. I'm probably going to shoot Shrewd stabilizers just because I like the stiffness. And I'm not entirely sold on, like, aluminum stabilizers. So, you know, whatever. They're very stiff. They're very light. But
what are the Shrewd ones?
The Shrewd Vantage.
Yeah.
They're carbon.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very stiff carbon. That's the hunting stabilizer for competition. It would be the Rev-X from Shrewd.
I think the one that I have.
But they're also much cheaper. Like a 12-inch Shrewd Vantage hunting stabilizer is like $110. That's pretty average for, you know, a high quality stabilizer. A Matthews 12-inch Bridgelock stabilizer is like $250.
Jesus.
And so I'm like, no, I'm not paying for that. I'm not sold on it. I can see where it has its place, but I know, based off of the size of the Creed and the size of my Traverse, and I shoot almost the exact same weight on my stabilizers between those two bows, I was like, I know what I'm gonna like on that bow, and I know that I can just buy a 12 and a 9-inch stabilizer and be fine.
Right.
And that'll just be my setup, like whatever. But also has the flat portion of the riser now on the newer bows designed for your V-bar, but I can slip my bow spider in there.
Oh.
And so I'll be able to have my bow spider on my hunting bow again, which is really nice. Because it's on my Creed, but it's not as solid of a contact point because I have to have the whole V-bar in there. There's not a lower insert for the stabilizer.
Right.
Which is true on the Lift RS too, because it's so short. But it's got a flat spot on the riser designed to get that as tight as possible. So I'll be able to slip the bow spider in there and put it right on my back. It's a fucking tit setup.
Yeah, I need to get one of those.
They're sweet, dude.
They're super
sweet.
They're
expensive because I think they're $80 or $90, but they're really, really cool.
Yeah.
And the owner's really, really sweet.
Huh.
I've had several. Actually, we're planning. I'll tell you that off the podcast, but we're planning something.
Really?
Yeah. I just don't want to put something out there that, you know, could potentially not be true. But, yeah, I'm excited about that new setup. Like, obviously, it's going to be a lot of money, but the reality is I bought my current hunting bow used, and so it was never registered originally, and it's not registered in my name. So I have no way to warranty that bow. If something goes wrong, I got to pay 100% out of pocket.
Yeah, that you might as well buy a new one.
So, come on. My point is, I think I've got to a point where technology has advanced enough for me to buy a new hunting bow, but it'll be probably another 10 years. You know, the Creed came out in 2013.
Yeah.
So we're, you know, 12 years.
I feel like if you make a jump every 10 years, that's pretty good.
Yeah. So I plan on keeping this bow. I'm not somebody who buys a new bow every year for multiple reasons. Number one, I'm not sponsored. I'm not forced to push a new bow.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a need for it.
Yeah. No sponsors on this podcast.
No. Hopefully next year we'll talk
about
that.
But we are willing to accept sponsors.
Yeah. Origin, Sika Gear, Matthews, Rec Broadheads.
Did you see Origin's post?
I did. Yeah.
On the tariffs or whatever.
Yeah. But
Stormy Cromer, if you want to send us some gear, sure. That'd be real cool.
Yep.
Yeah, Jared's
or
cold.
Filson.
Jared's cold.
Filson. Love Filson.
Yeah.
Love Filson. But
I wore my vest every single day when I hunted.
That's awesome.
It was amazing.
So anyway, to wrap up the bow thing, I just feel like I also don't like getting a completely new setup. I tinker. And I'll play with certain things, but I like to do it one thing at a time. So I'll play with my sight until I'm content, and I'll play with the rest, or I'll play with stabilizers a lot, specifically weight,
yeah.
Or positioning of the back bar, things like that. But I like to tweak one thing at a time so that I know the rest of my setup is dialed.
Right.
Versus if you're constantly changing to a brand new setup every single year, I personally don't think I'd be able to have that same consistency. So I give props to the pros who can do that. Granted, they also have a lot more time to shoot than I do. So that's kind of where I was at with the bow. And, you know, call a spade, man. I'm taking advantage of being able to live at home, and I'm fortunate enough to, you know, be able to do that. So
yeah.
I'm happy for that. But
do it, man.
Also, I'm probably going to film that bow build. I'll do it at my house and throw it up on YouTube. That'd be cool. So,
do you have a YouTube? Do you have a YouTube channel already?
I do. There's nothing on there right now. I'm gonna try to put together some things from this year's hunt. But yeah,
okay.
It's a work in progress because I also don't want to put a video out just to put a video out. Like I want to try to make a quality piece of content I'm not getting paid to do anything, so I'd rather put something up that I'm proud of.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But that's kind of just where I was at with that. So, super cool. But still have, like, I've still got some shooter bucks on the property that I could take advantage of. I think we all still have opportunities to
Yeah, to I'm going to get out this weekend. I'm going to have my kid with me, so hopefully that'll I'll get a decent sit in. But we'll see.
I really hope you are successful, especially with Colt, because I would really want him to see that experience and just see what his reaction is like.
It would be super cool.
Because I know you've been kind of on the fence of like, he's not ready yet type of deal.
Yeah, and he went out with me once. We sat, I just set a ground blind out in a spot that I've pre-scouted and whatnot. And I think it's a decent spot. We sat for bow season one time, only for, 45 minutes or something. And it's at a spot that I probably can't shoot anything with a bow. Like, the odds of something happening are very, very low.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to go out there and whatnot and kind of take it with me. But for a rifle, I think the odds are pretty good. I think it's a decent spot, so.
Especially right now, everything's moving around. And yeah. I'm not saying you're going to have, like, a monster step out in front of you, but even a doe, you never know what's going to come through.
I'd be super happy with a doe.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And sharing that experience. I mean, one of my, probably my most memorable hunt was sitting in the same tree stand with my dad, big platform blind.
Oh, yeah.
And shooting my 6-point with my bow, it was my second deer ever. Like, I love that experience. And so from your perspective, being a dad, being able to spend that time with your son, but also he's going to remember that.
Oh, yeah.
And if it's a positive experience, it's going to be, good memory for sure.
Yeah, we were just talking about that at deer camp. Then we had a year that me and my dad were in a double tree stand, and we both shot deer at the same time, basically, out of this tree stand.
3-2-1.
Yeah, it was. Oh man, it was so cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
We had a double tree stand set up in. This tree was maybe 6 inches around.
It was a jack pine.
It was, yeah, and it was fucking swaying, and it was, like, way too small of a tree, but it was like, it works.
The other thing, those double stands are, like, a maximum of, what, I think they put them at, like, 16 or 18 feet most of the time.
Yeah, it wasn't super tall, but.
Like, my dad's ladder stand that I shot my 7-point out of.
Yeah.
That tree stand's 25 feet.
Oh, Jesus.
So, like, when I stand up. And I'm probably launching an arrow from close to 30 feet
right
out of a tree, which is way taller than you need to be.
Yeah.
Like, when I saddle hunt, I usually sit about 15 feet. There's been a couple of times this year where I've had to really stretch my sticks, and I thought about getting some eighters for next season, not keeping them on all the time, but for certain hunts.
Right.
Because there was a time I was hunting the edge of this field. You might have seen it on my Instagram. But I was hunting the edge of this field that, like, I dipped down to a valley, but I wanted to be able to shoot to the field. And it's like 30 yards to the edge of the field. But I had to be able to get to like 22 feet in this tree.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm like stretching as far as I can to get, it was tricky. I hunted 3 days. Well, when I took those days off work,
yeah,
I hunted 3 days in a row doing that. And so that walk back, that was like a mile. And so I walked in there, climbed up, climbed down, and then had a fully loaded backpack. I haven't weighed that thing, but I bet it's close to 40 pounds at least.
Oh, wow.
I had all of my saddle gear. So sticks, platform, saddle, ropes, whatever, a bow hanger, a camera arm, my camera gear, and then I packed in my outer layers.
Yeah.
Plus rattling antlers and knives and that, shit like that.
Right.
So I had that manimal just stuffed to the gills. And, walking out with that thing, and it was like, it was a lot of weight, and it wasn't, my back didn't hurt, but my legs were just fucking killing me.
Right.
Cause that, first of all, it was probably a half mile, not a mile, but, it was just after you've, exercised essentially, you do a workout climbing up a tree like that, and then you put 40 pounds on your back and walk, and it's like, just brutal. And then I drive a manual truck, so I gotta you know, get out of there and
use your legs.
Use my legs to work a clutch. Yeah, it's just it's brutal, but it's a good time. So I got high hopes for the rest of the season, especially for Jared, dude. I fucking hope you get on that buck. That's sweet. That'd be really cool.
Be nice. That's for sure.
So
my dad was cracking up Saturday morning. I didn't go out, and we have an 8-point and a 9-point running around. They're almost identical, and then you know one's just got a. I don't know if it has a split brow tine or if one only has one brow tine or what's going on. But anyways, yeah, I think it was the 8-point was at my grandpa's spot. My dad's like, if you would have been there.
Yeah, that's a bitch of it, man. You can't shoot them if you're not there.
Yeah.
That's what they say, so.
Whatever. I enjoyed my sleep.
Mm-hmm. Also, wanted to give a shout-out to Vivian, my friend Vivian Felker. She shot her first bull elk this year.
Really?
I haven't had a chance to give her a shout-out on the podcast. But, yeah, shot her first bull. First, I think it's first elk, period. But she shot a nice bull.
Wow.
It's cool. So, yeah. Shout out Vivian if she's listening to this, but I'm very jealous, and I think I speak for all of us when we say
I want to go elk hunting so bad.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, I think we're at a good stopping point.
Hour and 20 minutes.
It didn't cover a whole lot. I mean, other than just deer season, but that's where we're at. So
it's kind of what we talk about here. Is
yeah, that's true.
Deer hunting and stuff. So
good luck to everyone else.
Yeah. Hey.
Congrats to those of you guys that have got them.
If you
get them, send pictures in.
Send pictures for sure. We'll put them up on the story, or tag us, and we'll get it up there. Also, for people who are curious to see the post of the buck or the antler doe that was shot, if you are listening to this on release day, which would be November 22nd, I will put that up on my story or on the podcast story, Knox and Nature _ podcast. So put it up on the podcast story if you're curious to check that post out. Or you can go to the Michigan Buck Poll Instagram page and you'll have to scroll a little bit, but you can find it there. Justin couldn't find it.
I couldn't find it, but, you know.
We appreciate everyone for listening. Like I said, if you enjoy the show, feel free to give us a follow on Instagram or rate or review the show, specifically Apple Podcasts. We don't have a ton of people listening on Apple Podcasts, so if you listen on Apple Podcasts, we'd really appreciate it if you gave a review to the show. So, yeah, you guys got anything else to add?
Oh, I don't think so.
Nope. All right. We appreciate everyone for listening. We'll catch you in the next one.